children. What are we gonna do to show we care? How are we gonna be there for our children when they feel that life has just not been that fair?
Good evening and welcome back to Mask's weekly radio show on Family Matters. Mask, Mothers and Fathers Alliance, saving kids, kids of all ages and all stages, dealing with all mental health issues, school issues, and addictions. If anybody needs a referral for a parent support group, for a therapist, for an inpatient rehab, an outpatient clinic, please give us a call. Maybe you have a kid that's still out of school and you need a yeshiva. We would like to be of help to you. So give us a call at Mask's confidential number, 718-758-0400, from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. every day, but Shabbos. Shabbos we're open from after the Sabbath until 10 at night. So I also want to bring up the issue of naloxone. We just finished with the most beautiful, amazing holiday, Yontif, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Yom Hatin, and then 8-day celebration of Simchas Torah. And there were a lot of families that are struggling, their loved ones with addiction, possibly using, misusing opioids. So Mask offers free training and free naloxone kits. Wherever you are, in Brooklyn, in New York, give us a call, and we will arrange for you to get a free naloxone kit, free training, even in your home. So give Mask a call. Maybe you want to jot our number down. Every home, and I repeat, every home should have a kit, not necessarily for yourselves, possibly a visitor, someone outside, a neighbor. You never know when you can save a life. And there are no side effects from it. So if you're not sure if what that person may have overdosed on, you still could use the naloxone. So feel free to call the Mask confidential anonymous number. Maybe you want to write it down for yourself or a loved one, your neighbor, maybe even someone you sit next to in shul. Our number is 718-758-0400. And tonight we have with us a dear friend, a colleague, working with him for many, many years, Mendy Barron, founder of the Ignite Teen Treatment Center in Vegas. Mendy Barron has an LCSW, and he is involved in helping save lives by helping those that are addicted in some way and on their journeys of recovery. So I'd like to welcome you on tonight, Mendy. How are you? Thank you for being on with us.
Hi, good, thank God. And I appreciate you having me, Ruchama, and what Mask is doing for the community is amazing.
Thank you. Of course, it's Mask's staff, and we're always here answering the phones, ready to try and connect people sometimes to a rehab like Ignite. So, Mendy, I want to talk about, we just finished the holiday. There was a lot of alcohol in some homes and some synagogues. It's tradition. And I want to talk, some people asked me when I was in synagogue, does having alcohol around cause abuse?
So this is an excellent question, and obviously, like you mentioned, it's part of the culture it involves alcohol, it's redemptive and so on. I would say that having alcohol itself does not necessarily cause abuse. However, having alcohol leaves you with a certain responsibility, because the use of alcohol can cause abuse, and people who struggle with addiction, if there's alcohol around, it can be a trigger and it can cause them to relapse.
So I've been, you know, with family and many different neighbors and around in shul this Yontif holiday season, and I'm just wondering, as a inpatient rehab to teenagers, what age should a child, I mean a young adult, I hope not a child, be given alcohol? I mean, I know they put a little bit on the baby's tongue at the bris when they're 8 days old, and I'm wondering what is the age that your rehab says that it's okay to be given alcohol?
So I love how you said it. It starts right away at 8 days old. And a lot of parents actually don't realize that they shouldn't be giving it to children. I mean, I hear parents, you know, at the Seder, it's okay, maybe one cup, maybe two cups, you know. So you are 100% correct. Absolutely, the conversation should not even begin until you're talking about teenagers. But I go a little bit further, and I really wouldn't have it accessible to teenagers either. I mean, by law, obviously, 21 is the age. But with teenagers, you know, expose them to alcohol, expose them to drinks, you're exposing them to a pattern of behavior that can lead to an addiction, that can become something they're attached to. And so I generally tell parents, just don't do it. Don't make it accessible. Don't give it to them. Don't offer a drink, at least until they're an adult that can make their own decisions.
So it's really very complicated. Like I mentioned, we, you know, every Friday night and Saturday, there is a kiddush made. Lots and lots and lots of houses only offer grape juice. But there are many, 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 many more houses that have alcohol. It's part of our tradition. And the concern is there's wonderful drinks like, you know, I don't want to mention a name in any negative way about the drinks, the alcohol, but there are very tasty, low alcohol content wines that people, you know, put out, and I watch how kids, you know, fill up their glass and they go, oh, it's like apple juice. And adults are agreeing with them, and they're saying, yeah, that one's fine. He could have it. She could have it. And, you know, there's a message that we're giving. You know, now it's this alcohol, and later it could be the next alcohol. And we really need to be careful and monitor the alcohol on one's table, in one's shul. I mean, some chastora, so much alcohol being used in a good way to be happy for the holiday. But it needs to be done respectfully. It needs to be done carefully, no underage. And not everyone is an alcoholic. I'd like to say that. So what's your comment about that, that not everyone is an alcoholic?
So that is a fair comment and a fair statement, that not everyone's an alcoholic, and not everyone who drinks is going to become an alcoholic. And when I talk about that and when I respond to the question, I'm referring to kids. And the one question I ask parents and teenagers is, do you want to draw the straw, right? If four people are in a room and you expose four of them to a lightweight champagne alcohol, but one of them has a genetic predisposition to addiction, right? Are you going to take the chance that that's your kid? You know, it's like gambling in a way with lives.
You know, I had an employee not long ago, and you know, she was working by us for, you know, a long amount of time, and one day she gets home and her grandson came home just drunk. He was just like, she was in shock about how he came home, and he never drank, never drank, teenager. And he shared later that it was strictly peer pressure. Went to a party, someone's birthday, There were no adults there. They offered alcohol, and he came home plastered. He was hospitalized. He had alcohol poisoning. It was a horrific, time for her. And I want you to know that every day after that, when she came to work, she was so emotionally drained that she could not continue working at MAFC. And that, you know, from all the phone calls coming in. And I want you to know that was one time hurt her grandson. So we never know who that one person is, which child it could be. And it's painful once they do, you know, drink excessively. And I know Hatzala, Maimonides, other hospitals, you know, over Simchas Torah, bring in so many young adults that come in drunk, alcohol poisoning. So I want to talk about how many drinks are okay.
So this is a fair question. I would say, again, with teens and with kids, no drinks are okay. But when you talk about adults and you talk about drinking, have to look at a person's, you generally would look at tolerance, but I would say to anybody that if you're trying to get into the Simchas Yontif and you want to have a little bit of alcohol to get into that spirit, you should not need more than one drink. You really shouldn't. If you need to get to two or to three or to four, you're experiencing another type of issue. One small drink would be fine. That should really be enough for your average person.
What about wine?
So wine is really, really dependent. And it's interesting that you brought it up when you talk about the sweet wines or the lightweight wines with the low alcohol, and the parents say that you can have it. I see that all the time. But do you know that kids will imbibe more alcohol? They'll drink more alcohol of that type. So they'll drink three or four cups at 4% or less because it tastes good and it goes down easy. And they'll end up drinking more than they would normally drink from a 12 or 15% dry wine. So you have to look at wine in the same fashion. If it's a high alcohol content wine, one. And if it's less, maybe two, but you have to be accountable for the fact that, hey, this tasted really good and went down really easy. You have to look at yourself. And that's really the key component, is looking at your own functioning. If you're no longer functioning, if you can't think straight, if your body is buzzing, if you can't focus or concentrate, you're done. Like, you've passed the amount of simcha needed to enjoy Simchas Yontif. There's no halachic requirement to be plastered on the floor in your own vomit.
So what about Shabbos? I mean, in so many neighborhoods and synagogues, they put out, I mean, really, kol hakavod to all those shuls that put out, you know, no drinking kiddush. So let's talk about those. Yontif is over now, and it's Shabbos. And there are plenty kiddushim, plenty, you know, I know in my neighborhood where I live, they have now, before Shabbos, Friday, late day, they have kugel, chalent, and alcohol, or herring and alcohol parties before davening, before Shabbos comes in. What message are they actually giving to their families that they're running to a kiddush even before Shabbos with a lot of alcohol, and the kids go with them? So what somebody does is not my business. My concern really is the children and those that are predispositioned, you know, their genetics, how they're wired, how their body is wired, and those are the concerns that I am responding to.
Absolutely. You know, and I think what you stress is most important. It's about the message that we're giving, right? We're not saying nobody can drink alcohol. We're not saying that people shouldn't have a little bit of an experience in Yontif, and we're not saying that a shul should say, absolutely not, we don't serve alcohol. But there's a responsibility piece. So when you talk about alcohol at shul, I see a lot of shuls put the alcohol in the corner next to all the other drinks, and they leave it, right? Simchas Torah is the same thing. There's the bar, and I just watch kids going and self-serving, adults serving well beyond when they should be serving themselves, people taking the whole bottles and sneaking outside. A very clear message from any shul would be to put the alcohol in view of the rabbi or to designate a member of the shul who's responsible for monitoring it and for saying, no, you've had enough, or no, you're underage, or, you know, we're missing a bottle. a community that shows that they care about it, that they understand the severity of it, that they take responsibility for what they're doing by putting it out there. That's the kind of message you want to show, especially around Yontif, and especially on a, you know, in a communal setting. It's critical that people realize that that by putting out alcohol, you're not simply saying everyone's making their choice. You are putting a loaded gun on the table to which you have a responsibility for. And if something happens with your loaded gun, even halachically speaking, you left your gun in a Rosh Hashanah, so to speak, you would be held liable. So there's a lot to be said on that topic for sure.
I want you to know that when I started Mass 22 years ago, it was 1.5 girls to 5 boys that were struggling with addiction. And today it's totally even. So I want people to realize it's not just the males. Females are drinking. They are becoming alcoholics at a very, very young age. I've said it on the radio many times before that one of my dear friends, her son at 11.5, he wasn't even 12 years old yet, used to drink off the door during the week, the open bottles of wine, and they always thought maybe it was someone, you know, she thought her husband during the week, the cleaning up, the, you know, whoever else was in the house. She never imagined it was her own 11-and-a-half-year-old son. It was a low-alcohol drink, and he went into full addiction mode as a result of drinking. He really suffered through the years with many different areas as a result. That is what he shared. So let's be, you know, aware of the alcohol, where they are, the bottles, what's going on in our homes. Now Yontif is over. I'm sure a lot of people have a lot of alcohol left over. So please, let's watch it. Let's also remember, we spoke about Erev Yontif, about the importance of always having grape juice available so that if someone is struggling, that's joining your table, a family member, a friend, someone you bring home from shul, a relative, a neighbor that is struggling, they don't need to announce it. If there's wine or grape juice on the table and you just say, would you like to make your own kiddush, let them pick what they want. If they're doing alcohol-free, at least you offer them grape juice on your table so that we respect their struggles, their journey. So, Mindy, let's go to the next part, which we've seen year after year after year at Simchas Beis Shoeva during the week between the days of holiday, the singing, the dancing on the street, but there's also some young people smoking pot and around, just publicly around in the community. And I want to talk about the harm in smoking pot. I know it's legal in many different states, and kids struggle with understanding both it being legal some places and some not. Also, kids don't understand the medicinal, what the difference is if used for medicinal purposes. And let's take it a little further. And what about those who say, oh, I used to do it in the 60s. So what's really going on with the harm of smoking some pot today?
Absolutely. So there's quite a few pieces to unpack, but I'm going to try to round it up in a simple fashion. A couple things. First of all, it's not the pot of the 70s. Today's pot is heavily produced. It's not just a green plant someone picks from the ground. They are adding chemicals in it to get you a better high. They are distilling the THC, which is the part of the marijuana that actually gets you high, into super concentrated amounts, so that what you're getting now is definitely not the clean, pure, natural stuff you thought you were getting. With adults, what I always say is, you know, if someone says, oh, I'm just using it for fun once in a while, I'm not going to sit here and argue with you. But the fact is, if you need to use it to get high, if you need to use it to feel better about yourself, to escape, to get the positive feelings, then you have to look at that. And with teens, there's absolutely zero question as to the detriment of it. It shrinks the prefrontal cortex, which is responsible for impulse control. It slows down the thinking. When you're dealing with teens, right, you have hormones and development and friends and peer pressure and possible mental health issues and all the other things that teens are dealing with. And then you're going at 90 miles an hour as a body, and then you slow it all down. And the negative effects are clear and documented, even early onset schizophrenia for teenagers. Those who have a family predisposition to schizophrenia, they're seeing these kids show up with schizophrenia as teenagers, which is mind-blowing. Then on top of it, you have a recent crisis, which you may have seen in the news with the vaping. And you know, people are seeing the vaping, and it's a little compound, it's clean, there's no smoke. We're using the little vaping machines, and now there have been over 1,000 cases of severe lung disease and quite a few deaths, to the point that the President of the United States got up a few weeks ago and said, we need to take action against this. And primarily, most of the lung disease and severe cases, they're now tracing back to people who are using the vaping and e-cigarettes for marijuana. So there's just so much that we don't know about it. And it is so different from the plant that people once smoked back in the 70s that at this point to use it is again, sort of taking a gamble. We don't know enough about it. I mean, even in the states where it's been legalized, the increase in car crashes, the increase in hospitalizations, the negativity, it's unbelievable. So I would say that's the message I would give to adults and for sure people who are responsible for teens and kids.
So what do you tell the young adults in your rehab or that, you know, you meet up with before they go in, how they should experience the Simcha of Yontif or Shabbos?
So this is a good question, because a lot of them, you know, or many of them can feel outcast and don't feel the connection necessarily to the Yontif. And the ability to enjoy Simchas Yontif really comes down to connecting with yourself and connecting with other people, having a sense of connection. And if you can't find that, then seeking out a drug or alcohol or something else is not going to be the answer. So Simchas Yontif really comes into tapping into, well, I mean, I'm not a spiritual leader of any sort, but tapping into your higher power. That's why I tell a lot of the kids, look, let's connect to whatever it is that you can connect with in the Yontif or the Shabbos. Find the experience that's meaningful for you, the people that are meaningful for you, and take that bit and work with it. For example, and not necessarily tied to Shabbos, you know, you can get high smoking marijuana. You can also get high, overcoming an obstacle that you've tried to overcome, or succeeding at something, or climbing a mountain. There's other ways to find highs, and that's really how Judaism was built. It wasn't built to find highs through alternative methods.
And there are, you know, Yontif, the holiday has been a long couple of weeks in a good way. So many wonderful different experiences. But there was a lot of synagogue going, you know, and going to shul every day when possibly somebody may have been abused. We spoke about it last week. But it's difficult, and a lot of young adults or even married people that have negative experience in their life around a synagogue or around their yeshiva or around their family, whatever it is, you know, leave the holiday, they go home. You want to share what happens then?
You know, when they have a negative experience and they go home, then the self-abuse starts. You know, they take abuse out elsewhere, and they put it into themselves, and they'll use, and sometimes they'll get depressed, and sometimes they'll have lows, and without people around to see it, and without the proper support, those can then roll right back into further mental health, self-harm, depression, anxiety, addiction. These are the kind of kids that we see a lot, you know, is the ones that put on a face in the community, that try to blend in, that try to make it through. Yontif can be a very hard time if you don't, you know, quote, fit in. And then you're left out on the other side feeling, you know, low and low self-worth and can, you know, not feeling very good about the community around you either.
Right. So what are some of the things you would say to parents that they could prevent alcohol abuse?
So there's a couple things. On a basic level, like you mentioned before, if you want to prevent abuse and you want to prevent your teen, because this is what parents will say, right? It's Yontif. It's around. It's successful. They have friends. What am I going to do? Lock them up? You know, and that's one extreme is, you know, I can't do anything. The other extreme is lock them up, which you can't do either. But there's a place in the middle. There's locking up your alcohol instead of leaving it out in fancy decanters. You know, I go into a lot of homes, they have the fancy tilt bottles of Johnny Walker, whatever. You know, it's for display. It's in big glass cases. It's very accessible. Don't leave it unlocked, right? Because your teens can access that. They'll do it. I know it. One out of every two teenagers that I've talked to have helped themselves to their parents' alcohol and the parents aren't watching. Either they'll take it out quietly at night, they'll invite friends, they'll sneak a bottle out, put a lock on it. One very simple way to make sure alcohol doesn't get abused. The second thing is to have a conversation. Talk with your teens. Here's what abuse looks like. Here's how it can happen. One thing parents don't do a lot is tell their teen, look, I'm telling you not to get drunk, but if you go out on Simple Space at Shoeva, or you go out and you are drunk and you don't feel like you're capable of driving home safe, or if you're a girl and you don't feel like you can keep yourself safe, like someone might, God forbid, take advantage of you, call me. I will not judge you. I will show up and I'll pick you up. At least they know there's a safety mechanism. And obviously talking to them about addiction, about what can happen and what to watch out for is very important. Education is important. And the third is just keeping lines of communication open. A lot of parents they check in once there's a crisis, right? Once your kid has, God forbid, overdosed or come back plastered, but they don't take the time to check in on a regular basis. How are you doing? What's going on? How is school? How are you feeling? Creating moments where they can sit with their kids and just, you know, observe them and be part of their lives. You know, we're all on our phones and at work, but creating just moments with your kids so that you're tapped into what they're experiencing, for better or for worse.
So we're running out of time, and I'd like you to please repeat again the importance of the Shabbos, running Erev Shabbos to a Kiddush club and kids knowing we have exactly 30 seconds. What do you want to say?
I just want to say that, like you said, the most important thing and the most important thing for prevention, period, whether you're an individual or a community, is perception. You need to have people realize that this thing is taken seriously, that there are mechanisms in place to prevent the abuse, and that you understand, hey, this is something dangerous, and that I have a responsibility. Responsibility is the key word here. Not just for myself, not just for my kids, but for other people and for other kids. And that this
thank
is a shared
you.
Responsibility.
Yeah, thank you, Mindy, for being on and always being available for families in need. I'm sorry we're running out of time. I'll have you on again, God willing. I just want to wish everybody again a wonderful evening, a beautiful Shabbos, and always remember, hang in, hold on, hug tight, and masks number 718-758-0400. Thank you, and have a good night.